From First into Nagasaki by George Weller. Robinson Crusoe's of Wake Island. For reasons impossible to determine at this point, the Navy did agree to transmit Weller's extended story of two civilians who managed to survive in the austere brush of Wake Island for almost 3 months after it was taken by the Japanese soon after Pearl Harbor, December 1941. The gallant, futile defense of the island itself has been chronicled many times, but perhaps for space limitations, perhaps because the saga was nearly 4 years old, the Chicago Daily News chose to heavily cut this improbable tale of survival and hiding, and the odyssey of Scotty and Fred is virtually unknown. The fact that these pages were transmitted, apparently in favor of Weller's far more timely POW dispatches, and one day before he left Nagasaki, suggests that they were all he was permitted to send. Nagasaki, Japan, Tuesday, September 25th, 1945. The two Robinson Crusoes of Wake Island. Opening the doors to prison camp number 23 at Aizuka in central Kyushu has revealed the unbelievable story of how two middle-aged American construction men lived in Robinson Crusoe style for 77 days on tiny Wake Island after the coral speck fell to the Japanese. Though other Americans have lived on large islands like Guam while they were still held by the Japanese, none ever succeeded under such hair's breadth terms as Wake Island Scotty, who is 55-year-old Logan K. of Clear Lake Park, California, and his pal Fred J. Stevens, 49, of Sioux City, Iowa. Wake Island is only 4 miles long and less than a third of a mile across. It is so flat that seas sometimes wash over its beaches, being only 21 feet at its highest point. There are no caves and no coconut groves. Yet Wake Island Scotty and his pal, by creeping from one rabbit's nest to another in bushy thickets, managed to keep the Japanese outwitted from December 8, 1941, when the Japanese first bombed Wake Island, until March 9, 1942. They lived on the hopes of seeing American warships steam in and recover Wake and set them free. Dreams never realized until after 6 months' labor on Wake and nearly 2 years of bitter servitude in Japan, including a period at Death Camp No. 18, building the dam at Sasebo, where 20% of 265 Wake Island Americans died. Wake Island Scotty has survived to return to his beloved wife Fritzy and his soldier son Howard in California, and Stevens is en route to join his wife and 3 children in Iowa. But their days of being hunted while hiding literally in a Japanese backyard on Wake live again in this diary kept by Wake Island Scotty and made available by him to a Chicago Daily News correspondent, George Weller. This diary, written while the two men were ill, thin, afraid, and on the run, has been carried and buried and redug many, many times. It has been searched for by dozens of Japanese sentries in camps where merely possessing any writing materials was a capital crime. Yet it has prevailed with its full record of hope, disappointment, and faith, together with the human will to live and even some sparks of humor. Wake Island looks like the open jaw of an alligator, with the lagoon as the inside of its mouth, which, before the war, was intended by the United States as a submarine base. The ends of both the upper and lower jaw are broken off into separate islets, the upper being Peel and the lower Wilkes. Scotty and Stevens both served on the guns with Marines on Peel before becoming fugitives. Their hideout eventually was in skimpy thickets which lie on the inner side of the upper jaw along the lagoon. But by night, they wandered in other parts of the island searching for food and water. From their thicket hideout, looking southward across the lagoon, they were able to watch Japanese planes take off and land on the single American-built airfield on the southern or lower half of the jaw, a mile away. Scotty noted down all such movements in hopes of aiding the naval rescue party, which never came. Stevens had served on Wake for 9 months, and Scotty for only 5 weeks when Japan struck. They were two of 1,100 men hired by the Morrison Knudsen Company of Boise City, Idaho, one of 6 contracting firms joined to build the government airfield and the submarine entrance under the name of the Pacific Naval Air Bases Company, with its main offices in Alameda, California. Salaries averaged $200 monthly, with up to $90 bonus for prolonged service. The Pan Air Company already had clipper service with buildings on Peel Island, while the government had a single marine flying field on the lower jaw of Wake. The Wake workmen first knew something was amiss when a clipper, after taking off for Guam at 7 in the morning, returned, jettisoned some gas, took Pan Air personnel aboard, and departed for Honolulu. Wake Island Scotty's Journal is given here with brief interpolations in brackets by Weller in order to explain the captive situation more fully. December 8, 1941. We were bombed at 11:55 a.m. by 18 planes, which we heard came from Marshall Islands, 600 miles south of Wake. 27 killed, 130 injured. Pan Air buildings on Peel entirely demolished, and 7 Marine planes as well. Clipper left 1 hour after the bombing for Honolulu with white personnel. December 9th. 11 planes bombed Company Hospital and the new warehouse on Wake. They also set a fire to 6 of our barracks. Reader's note, these buildings were on Peel Island, the northern or upper jaw of Wake. Ground batteries got 1 plane. Scouts got 1 plane. Reader's note, that day Scotty found Stevens sick with stomach poisoning and hid him in a dredge pipe against the bombings. Scotty made his way to the demolished Pan Air Hospital and found an untouched bottle of December 9th. 11 planes bombed Company Hospital and new warehouse on Wake. They also set a fire to 6 of our barracks. Reader's note, these buildings were on Peel Island, the upper or northern jaw of Wake. Ground batteries got 1 plane. Scouts got 1 plane. Reader's note, that day Scotty found Stevens sick with stomach poisoning and hid him in a dredge pipe against the bombings. Scotty then made his way to the demolished Pan Air Hospital and found an untouched bottle of physic in the ruins, returned to the dredge pipe, and treated Stevens. December 10th, 10:40 a.m., 1 hour earlier than yesterday. Japanese planes came in high, and they got our powder storage on Wilkes Island. Reader's note, this powder storage was being used to blast a new mouth through the eastern end of Wilkes Island, 500 feet long and 30 feet deep, to permit submarines, after entering the fringing coral reef, to pass through Wilkes Island to the deeper northwestern end of Wake's central lagoon. It was two-thirds done when taken by the Japanese. Planes and land batteries claimed 2 bombers shot down. December 11th. We were shelled from ocean at 5:45 a.m. by destroyers. American subs and land planes got 4 or 5 boats and transports. Reader's note, the estimate was later raised to 11 enemy sunk. One was sunk by a direct hit from our 5-inch guns in the powder magazine. The planes got 1 and the sub got the rest, all sunk. Reader's note, that day civilian workmen abandoned all their smashed new buildings on the northern jaw, carrying their wounded around a bend in Wake's horseshoe to the eastern end of the Marine airfield. There, they improvised a hospital in the abandoned concrete ammunition magazines. The planes came in at 9:50, but they didn't do any damage, as our batteries kept them away. December 12th. I helped move guns last night, as bombers had our old positions spotted. Reader's note, Scotty and other workmen took the anti-aircraft battery, which had been in the middle of Peel, and moved it to the northeastern end, then camouflaged the old position to resemble guns and try to draw Japanese bombs. The dredge pipe where Scotty lived with the invalid Stevens was located on Peel about 1/4 mile from the inlet separating Peel and Wilkes. December 13th. Quiet all day, no bombers. One observation plane shot down by our scouts at 5:30 a.m. buried 42 of our boys today. Reader's note, about 35 were civilian workmen, the remainder Marines and Navy sailors. Stevens, now recovered, was serving on the same anti-aircraft gun with Scotty. December 14th. Bombed at 10:45 by 27 German Heinkels. Reader's note, as they appeared to Marine fighters. Lots of damage and some dead. Built bomb shelters for our air crews, and one of our last 3 planes cracked up, taken off. Now we only have 2 left that'll fly. December 15th. Had breakfast and moved back to the barracks. Reader's note, from the dredge pipe on Peel where he had been living with Stevens. Japs came in at 6 p.m., no great damage and no casualties. December 16th. 18 bombers came at 1 p.m. and got the old Camp 1. Reader's note, that's at the western end of the airfield on Wake's southern jaw. They also got the oil storage. December 17th. Planes came in at 5:50 p.m., dropped a few bombs, and machine-gunned our camp. We went inside the concrete pipe. Pan Air was given another dose of bombs. December 18th. Went over to Pan Air and got medical supplies. Reader's note, that was from the ruins. Got them for our doctor. Reader's note, that's Dr. L. Shank of San Diego. December 19th. Bombers came at 10:30 a.m. Not much damage. They burned a small amount of fuel. December 20th. Rained all day. No bombers today. PBY, reader's note, a PBY Catalina, i.e. a flying boat, came in with some brass hat aboard. Looks like we might get some help. December 21st. Dive bombers came in flocks at 9 a.m. and gave us hell. Just about ruined us. PBY left just before the raid and took our commanding officer with him to Honolulu. 12 o'clock high bombers came and bombed our barracks, so we moved back to Pan Air. Dive bombers got one of our range finders and crippled our gun. Reader's note, that's where Scotty was serving as ammunition loader. Our first sergeant was killed on the range finder. Reader's note, Scotty never knew his name but says he was a very brave boy. December 21st, they came in today and stayed a half hour. Leisurely bombed and gunned our camp, and they got our last little airplane. We have no range finder left, and now are practically down to rifles, one for each two men on the island. All they have to do now is land and take over whenever they want it. We got a small piece of shrapnel in the back of my right shoulder, and the doctor says he'll get it out in a day or two. It doesn't hurt more than a sliver, so we'll not worry about it. They bombed us for an hour in getting our rangefinder. Also, both of our last planes. We are now sure out of luck. December 23rd. Jap fleet moved in, and after many signals, opened up on our batteries. Reader's note, only three remained on Peel. They made a direct hit on the first emplacement, blasting it out, then ceased firing. At dawn, dozens of planes started bombing, and things were in a panic in camp. And Pat, reader's note, that's Patrick Herndon of Fox Park, Wyoming, Pat deserted our dredge pipe. Fred and I found a hole right in the middle of camp and crawled in. Reader's note, Marine officers who that day came to the construction camp notified the homeless among the ruins that the Japanese were about to land and warned them to avoid being caught with rifles because the Japanese would shoot any thus captured. Fear grew in the trapped men who saw themselves unable to fight any longer to hold weight. Later, the bombing stopped and everything got quiet except enemy planes flying low all over the island. At 11:30, I looked out carefully, and I'll never forget the sight. About 500 of our company men were being herded past us, stripped down to nothing but their shorts, and being herded towards Peel. It looked like a brick wall for these men, and Fred and I sat tight. Reader's note, a brick wall is a firing squad. December 24th, Christmas Eve. Jap sentry almost found us last night. He was within 5 feet but missed us. We hope to escape tonight if there's a chance, and we had a close call, but something attracted the sentry's attention. If we can hold for 2 hours more until darkness, then we'll move out of here and hide in the brush. We will not give up without a fight, as we think the other boys were stripped for the firing squad. The Japs are working frantically everywhere to set up guns, and if we can make the brush, reader's note, that's from their dugout in the center of the camp's ruins, then we can live until we're found. As food is scattered all over the island, water is our problem now, once we get out of the woods. Getting dark now, and we're waiting for clouds to cover the moon. December 25th, Christmas. We made it on our hands and our knees, lying in depressions when clouds went off the moon. We went to the beach and southeast along the beach, in edge of the breakers. We got wet, but got around the sentries and made the brush. We ran into one big gun where 20 Japs were sleeping, but did not wake up, and went another way lying by the road in the brush till the moon got out and the clouds came, and then crossed over to the large brush patch. If I were not so ill, reader's note, Scotty was suffering with severe diarrhea, then I would enjoy the trip as I got a kick out of every close call, and this trip was full of them. I'm getting better today, and we found our dugout at 11 o'clock at night and got a bed for the night. Am all in. Woke at daybreak and wished Fred Merry Christmas. We believe there is a Santa Claus. Spent the day in brush lying low, and how low? But we feel better tonight. December 26th. Found another bed last night and crawled back in the brush this morning. Foliage is thick and ground is wet, and flies are about as bad as the Japs. We're getting set for months here. We found enough water last night to last us a month. The U.S. should have this place back by then, and we'll try to be here when they do. Jap sentries patrol constantly on the lookout. Trucks are working fast all day and all night, and I'm getting much better. I made the lagoon last night and found some clean clothes, and the Japs will soon have all camps looted, and then that'll be easier for us. They loot through everything and throw it on the ground just like monkeys. We found a dollar bill and some silver they threw away. They tore the bill into bits first. Reader's note, these camps were in patches of brush where company men had hidden during the day in order to avoid being strafed by Japanese planes. There are only about 100 acres of such brush in Wake's entire area of 2,400 acres. These 100 acres were Scotty's and Stephen's hideout for the coming weeks, during which the Japanese continually looted and relooted. Lots of food everywhere, and we're burying some each night, but not too much, so it won't show or be missed. December 27th. Slept in deserted camp last night, and we buried much canned food and 4 gallons of water in glass jars, and we forgot 2 containers, and we'll get them tonight. Did a little looting behind the Japs, and we sat by the lagoon and watched the lights signal in at sea. Reader's note. The fugitives used to watch a Japanese submarine surface in what had been planned as an American base and wink signal lights to warships on the surface. We rose at 5 a.m. and moved back into the jungle and had apricot juice for breakfast and then a can of boneless chicken each. Camouflaged our hideout, but we must move soon as it's getting too wilted. And we're about as snug as 2 rabbits with 4,000 hounds after us. But we're not afraid, just careful. We have coffee for breakfast, tea for lunch, beer for dinner, all from the same canteen. It's now 3 p.m. and we'll set out again in about 2.5 hours. December 28th. Heard Japs looting all around us last night between 4 and 5, talking and breaking open trunks and the brush being full of loot. Over 500 men carried their stuff out here, and there are probably 1/2 that many foxholes to be looked into and torn apart. We found 1 $2.50 gold piece they overlooked and 81 cents in silver. I carry a hatchet and a knife, and Fred carries a hammer and a knife. We wish we had revolvers, though. At 2:15 today, Sunday, 3 Japs walked right over the edge of our nest, one carrying the suitcase over his shoulder on a stick, 2 following behind him, and they were off the trail looking for some more camps to loot and walked right onto our doorstep. Fred and I sat tight, and they didn't see us, though we were less than 10 feet away, and they were close. Man, too close. I just sat still and crossed my fingers, and Fred did the same. December 29th. I found a fountain pen, and here we go from pencil to ink. Now 2:15 p.m., and we're hugging the turf. Have heard the Japs twice today within 100 feet of our apartment. Thought we heard sirens short while ago, but birds do so much screaming one is not certain. Seaplane just took off and passed over at a low altitude, going very fast, and we were looking for Japs starting to pick up all the food around the camp soon, so we hide some each night. We didn't venture out until 11:30 last night and came in at 5 this morning, but crawled under some brush and slept 3 hours. What a life. We stayed in bed for breakfast this morning, had the morning paper first, then coffee and ham and eggs. Coffee was weak. It will be tea for supper, all out of the same water canister. Laundryman is not yet called today, must change the laundry. December 30th. Well, here we are again, 2:15, again and going strong. Reader's note, Scotty often wrote at this hour, 2:15 p.m., because the Japanese were resting in the heat after luncheon instead of scouring the brush. We found more water last night and brought in 1 big can of chili beans, sardines, and cheese crackers. Also found some drafts and cashier's checks for $400, $200, $100, and $18 cash. Total for the night, $718.11. Put it in the kitty, getting so we can smell money in the dark. We brought in a can of powdered milk and milk our own cow now. 1 more day of this year left, and soon Congress will come back from their vacation and do some more talking about fighting. What a bunch of boys we have been paying all these years. We, too, do not know what's going on in the world, but we can bet that in Washington, it's all mostly talk. December 31st, last day of 1941, and what a year. Enough happenings to make some people a lifetime. No Japs within alarming limits today. It rained, and we had to take cover in an adjacent dugout, but maybe safe while raining, but in sunshine, looters are often snooping. January 1st, 1942. Happy New Year, everybody. Started out lucky for me, for I found a check for $150.20 in cash. Check was wet, but we'll put it by to dry. Reader's note, Scotty is very Scottish, though born at Bridgeville, California. Well, this swells our potential pot to more than $800. Went to the dugout to escape the rain, and Fred heard some Japs coming. They missed us by inches. Our closest call to date. We're moving today to dry our hideouts. January 2nd. Fixed up dry shelter further away from camp. Spent day undisturbed there, but once heard Japs looting the camp. We'll only be found by accident here if they search for us. But we now can tell there are probably 3,000 Japs on this little island and only about 100 acres of brush for hiding. When we're not busy, the Japs often prowl through it to kill birds and look for new camps to loot. Well, here's hoping. January 3rd. The day passed quickly, and we fixed one brush fence to keep Japs out of the trails near the camp. Ate salad and shrimp with mayonnaise. We have half gallon of this stuff left. It's now getting to be sundown, and the moon will be right up. Going out at dusk to get some exercise. January 4th. Found a real food cache last night. Got 10 cans of sausage and 6 of chipped beef. Also 12 cans of tuna and a gallon of cranberries and 1 gallon of Bartlett pears. Good food ahead except crackers or bread. But we'll make cereals do. We do not dare light a fire. Maybe later when it gets stormy. It's going to be cloudy tonight and we'll set paper. Readers note that's tar paper roofing, to catch rainwater. It stayed quiet, but heard Jap looters frequently. January 5th, found 6 gallons of water. It's the 14th day since we became fugitives from the monkey gang. We slept at Palace Hotel last night because of the rain. 2 Japs went by very near, but not so close as before. We blocked most of the near trails with dead trees, but they must have climbed over. I think they were lost. We'd like to know what the U.S. is doing about getting back this place. Guess they know by now that we are at war. Christmas holidays are over and Congress must have about finished its bicarbonate of soda. The Japs here are working every minute to make it harder and cost more lives to take back Wake, but our Navy don't seem to be showing up yet. We know they can't let the Japs keep this place, as it would be a base to bomb shipping and the Pacific, and it must be kept open for supplies if we're going to win this war. Seems that we're not ready, as Knox says we are. We need a revision of our whole defense setup with some young brains. Weather is broken today into some sunshine and a little rain. Spring is looking in on us. The quails are mating around us and little lizards are hatching out. Birds are nesting and days are getting noticeably longer. Jap trucks are very busy strengthening positions. All buildings are being mined, no doubt, and they'll be destroyed as soon as it looks like the island would be retaken. Fred and I are sitting tight, but days are getting awful long and flies are very bad. I'm better, but not well yet. I'm very weak and dizzy, and I don't have the right food, also very thin, but some days the stomach is fairly normal, but the next day not so good. I cannot get over seeing the other boys stripped down to their shorts by Japs and wonder if they were put on a boat or if it was a brick wall for them. Readers note that's a shooting squad, firing squad. Well, we'll probably find out someday if we're caught. If we're caught, we'll surely find out. January 6th. Got up early and camouflaged the camp. This is our first work at daybreak each morning. 1 scout and 3 bombers went out to the northeast at 6 o'clock. A scout returned twice and bombers returned about 3 to 4 in the afternoon. 4 alarms from sirens seem to have the Jap boys on their toes. We hope Uncle Sam starts knocking at their door soon. 11-inch guns will be music to us. January 7th, up at 5:30 in more camouflage. Read a story in Reader's Digest and started a novel. Went back to old camp and found that it got looted yesterday by the Japs, but it was another close call. We're still one move ahead of the Japs, and we sat a long time on our front porch and finally went to bed with lima beans for lunch and plums for dessert. January 8th, went to the Chinese labor camp and brought in some cornflakes. Bomber number 13 just passed over us on the way out. A large 4-motor job, number 20, followed going south. Little scout plane left at 6:15. 3rd bomber now going out. Lunch was new potatoes, corn, sardines, seedless grapes. They were very good. January 9th, slid out at 4:30 in the morning. And lone wolf for sugar and books while Fred camouflaged the camp. Near visit from 1 Jap who at 11:30 came within 30 feet of our camp. We're going to screen some getaway so that we can crawl off unseen if they climb in on us. All 3 bombers went out today as usual. January 10th, Mary's birthday. Happy birthday, sister. Arose at 3:30 a.m. and went out for food. Moon was light as day. Camouflaged at 5. At 11:30, a Jap knocked on the door. We thought we were finally caught. He looked right at us, then turned and walked away. Must have had his eyes on something nearer to him. We moved into deeper brush and lay low the rest of the day, thinking perhaps the Jap had gone for help. Now, about dark, we think we're going to move camp. January 11, 35 days since the war started, about 20 since the island was captured. Japs came back, raided us, and we lost what few trinkets we had gathered. We're still at large, thanks to our lucky star. We've moved a half mile southeast along the edge of the lagoon, and by 1 o'clock, four Japs have already passed nearby. There are just too many people on Wake Island for a small spot. Probably 3,500 Jap soldiers or more right now on Wake. They're very nervous today. They think that the Americans are going to invade soon. It's about time that we think. January 12th. Yesterday was a nightmare from noon on. Japs all afternoon, almost stepping on us. Seems we picked a group of trees that reached to the lagoon's edge. At high tide, the Japs could not get by on the lagoon side, so they either went around us or crawled through. At least three were 20 feet from us in the brush, and five more passed nearby just outside. This is not good for our nerves. We moved back near the old camp. January 13th. Slept at the Waldorf Astoria. Reader's note, Scotty and Fred nicknamed their hideouts after prominent hotels, the Waldorf Astoria and the Mark Hopkins, etc. We had a good bed and we overslept until it was too late for safe traveling. I'm jittery and I wish that Uncle would start knocking on the door with some 11-inch guns. That will be sweet music to us and we'll find a hole while it's going on. January 14th. Well, we got by the 13th just by a hair and a hope. We hope for better as we're getting jittery. We slept on coral. Wish we had some outside news and knew how our folks are and when Uncle Sam is coming to get us. January 15th. It's now approaching mid-afternoon when the looting is heaviest. We might get by with little or no alarm as the near camps have been pretty well combed over and hence the Japs work farther away. But by the same token, they creep into all the likely trails looking for more loot. We have camouflaged trails to our camp as much as possible. We expect American help about Sunday, if not before. January 16th. We almost had collars. They missed us by 15 feet. They were probably lost while looting and trying to find a road, and they did it, but almost stepped on us while doing it. Guess we'll have to put up some signs. Private property, keep out. Lots of noise today. Trucks and tractors going all day. We were out 2 hours last night and got a little exercise, and we really needed it. We've been lying down so long we get dizzy when we stand up, and we're very weak. Made another day by the grace of God in 15 feet of brush. Something is sure taking care of us as we couldn't be this lucky. January 17th. My son's birthday. He's 25 years old today. Well, it doesn't matter much what happens to me. I have the comfort of knowing that my son will carry on and that our little mother will be provided for, and this makes it easier for us to face the hazard of each succeeding day. We've been within the Valley of the Shadow now for 41 days, and we've had a lot of close calls, but we're being careful as we know how to be. If I don't get back, I will have had what few folks have had, 25 years or two of the best scouts on earth. The Nips were busy today at gun practice all day long. January 18th. We went out early and found a 2x6 tongue and groove to make body of a crossbow. We'll hunt some nails for ammunition tonight. Reader's note, Scotty made the bent part of the bow from cocoa wood and eventually was able to kill rats at 20 yards. Flies are terrible today. About 20 on my hands as I write this. January 19th. Japs are collecting all mattresses in the camps around us. They were here today at 11:30 and got a truckload. Now is 0 hour. Japs are moving all around us, and some talk English to each other. Reader's note, Scotty later learned that the voices talking English belonged to parties of American prisoners whom the Japanese brought back under guard to reveal hidden supplies. January 20th. One alarm at 10:30 when three Japs walked just past our camp. We could see them, but they couldn't see us. There's a tractor working near us making a lot of noise, and I slept out at Mark Hopkins last night, and Fred stayed in camp. I had the bridal suite, but no blanket and no rat trap, but I slept better, no snoring by Fred to listen to. Another alarm this afternoon, but the trail drew them away. January 21st. Up at 5:30 in the morning and look for my new home. The more we look, the better we like what we have. Morning passed without alarm except for some rocks thrown at some birds by the Japs. Only one plane took off this morning, and I guess the Japs have given up expecting Uncle Sam to try to take back Wake Island. January 22nd. We went out last night and looked after our water supply and found 2 gallons missing. We feel that there might be some other Americans still hiding on the island. Although we're not sure, we keep close to our dugouts, and we found 4 company contracts, and I'm picking up all that I can. January 23rd, bad news last night. The Japs found 2/3 of all of our food supply and took it away. Now we're crowded for 30 days supply food, even if we cut down on our eats. We caught no water last night, as we only had 1 shower and it was too light. We're moving all of our food to what we hope are safer places, but these Japs are regular bloodhounds. January 24th. We caught 11 gallons of water last night, enough for 3 weeks, and we also buried 20 cans of food that we brought in from another cache, where the Japs are combing the brush harder. Today is 48 days since the war started, and 32 days we've been in the brush hiding and dodging the Japs. They soon should get tired. January 25th. 2 mild alarms this morning, but they went by. Some news of home folks would be welcome, but we don't dwell too much on that because it gets us down. We do wonder why Uncle Sam doesn't get going, but I guess he just wasn't ready when this thing started. If he had seen as much of the Navy as we have here on Wake Island, he would know that he wasn't ready. January 26th. Jap construction drag line moved up to our place at 9 this morning, and there's been heavy blasting at times so near that small rocks fell around us. These boys have a lot of efficiency and don't seem to mess around. We would do well to send some of our boys to their school, especially Knox, who was telling the world he was ready months ago. It's 50 days since the war started and we're not ready yet. January 27th, blasting today. We got rocked at noon but not hit. We have looked for a new hotel but can't find one so well hid, so we're going to stay here. Our jitters are better. January 28th. Just at 12 noon, we heard brush crack and looked up to see 3 Japs going by the trail just 50 feet from our camp. Suddenly one turned back and then started in over the brush directly towards us. He got within 20 feet and we faded out the other way, making as little noise as possible. We crawled on our hands and knees for 700 feet and ran across the road and dived into the brush on the other side. We went into camp and crawled into a place right under the doormat and stayed all night and day without food and water and then went back to see if we could salvage anything and found our camp intact. God is still looking after us, but I don't know why. January 29th. Spent the day in hideout number 4. No light, no food, no flies, no room, no air, but no Japs. Felt lucky we were alive. These Japs have done more actual work on this island in 37 days than the U.S. did in 9 months. Work that we should have been doing, and we would not have lost Wake. Of course, there was no war on when we started, but everything for the service should be built first, not for beauty. Came home at 10 o'clock last night and found hideout number 3 okay, our gift from God. We arrived on the island 3 months ago, and my $30 bonus will start on Sunday. January 30th. Fred discovered this morning that the last Jap who went after us had found his little dog and his little bag of treasures, and that's evidently why he stopped and didn't find the camp, as he was all excited about the bag. The planes were patrolling all day and the trucks were busy, and gosh, we are so glad to be in this home again after thinking that we had lost it. I've been very weak of late and get so tired, no starch food and not enough exercise, and I'm losing weight but putting on whiskers and I begin to look like Christ. January 31st. I feel better today, but I'm still weak and tired. 3 planes overhead all afternoon, and I'm burying this book tonight, and I'll start a new one, so as not to lose my record if anything slips. February 1st. I went for a walk and ran into 2 Japs, but they turned away in time. Hard rain came, and Fred had uncovered our bed before he left, and it got wet right through. We feel the Japs might get out of detail to hunt us down soon. We will have to be on the watch for sentries at night on the trails. My $30 monthly bonus from the company begins today, my 4th month on Wake Island. February 2nd. We are 2 groundhogs, and today is Groundhog Day. Plane's up at 6:30, and they seem to be expecting company. I hope it's Uncle. Sun is shining, so I guess we'll stay in our holes for 6 weeks more unless the Japs smoke us out. There's a cold northeast wind, and now we have nothing to wear except shirt, shorts, and pants. No undershirts, socks, or coats. It's hard to keep warm, and planes have been lazy. Not much doing in war business. Good night, dear mother and son. February 3rd. Showers and cold. Breakers are rolling high. We took stock and can go about 3 weeks on food we have, but then we must raid the main camp. However, if we get the right kind of windy dark night in the next week or two, we'll go in to ease our worries. It's like pulling a tooth and we'll get it over. February 4th. Fred has a hunch that help is coming soon. First time he has been optimistic about this. With planes up all morning, half the day is licked, which is something to us as we are living from hour to hour now. Little lizards crawl over us, catching flies. They're so tame now, we have to brush them off while riding. Their heads and bodies are just 2 inches long and tails about 3 inches. Dark brown with 3 gold stripes from end to end of the body. There are 6 on me as I write this, and I love them. One has a purple tail, and one little fellow is speckled and has no stripes. I guess he's just a private. February 5th. According to my figures, it should take Uncle Sam about 60 days to get organized, equipped, and supplied to start steaming up the Pacific. So he should be on his way here any day now with plenty of planes, boats, and subs to take care of the situation. One Jap plane is still out. We can only speculate as we are here in the dark, on the underside of the war. We only know that for Uncle to control the Pacific, he has to occupy all the islands that can be used as bombing bases, and that includes Wake Island. Yesterday, I think, would have been Grandpa K's birthday. I'm hoping soon to hear some sweet music like 1,000-pound bombs dropping on our roof. February 6th. Put a layer under our bed on the ground, raising it up from the dampness 2 inches, which is too much altitude for safety. I guess we'll get used to it as the new leaves are coming to help our camouflage. We now lie down all day and are getting really soft. You'd see our hair and whiskers. Japs are putting in crops around us as though they intend to stay for a while. Soon they may have to move out families and even some dogs. Then we'll have some real trouble on our hands. February 7th. Time going past today more slowly than ever before. The birds are sitting in trees along our back trail and the sun's beating down very hot. We're getting soft and we can hardly get around after lying flat so much. February 8th. Now 2 months since the war on Wake Island started and we're still okay, but we have our fingers crossed. Haven't tasted bread for 6 weeks and I won't, I guess. I read most of the day and my eyes are okay. I lost my glasses with my bag when the Japs landed, but found a good enough pair. Fred and I wish that nights were longer and they're so restful. When one has to be alert every minute of the day, it's very fatiguing. Fred and I agree that we are more tired after a day of watching than after a day of hard work. Try lying flat just one day watching constantly for Japs with guns who are looking for you and probably will shoot you on sight. February 10th. Went to old barracks to see if any food was still there. Found the place boarded up and it looks as though Japs are using it for a warehouse. Coming back, I ran into a trap in the dark, but luckily I was going very slowly and found it just before making any alarm. We detoured and got no food. I'm getting corns on my seat from lying down so much. The Japs have a large garden right near us with a well, but their water is too brackish to drink, so we'll have to continue to catch ours from the rain. We've been going very light on food, about half of what we should have, and I feel very weak and tired, but a few good events will cure that. February 11th. Morning moon is just a sickle, and two patrol planes were up at 6 a.m. We figure we can get by 3 weeks more by being careful with our food, and if we don't get help by then, it's going to be tough. We hope it rains, and we hope it rains bombs soon. How sweet they will sound on our roof. Each one that lands will be as welcome as money dropping in the cash register. It's now 50 days since the occupation and 66 since the bombing, and Uncle must be on his way by now. February 12th, Lincoln's birthday. Well, Abe, we found 10 days' supply of food this morning. Yep. Got up early and took a crawl through the brush for exercise and found a sack with 7 cans of artichokes, 5 cans of milk, and a gallon of can of lima beans, and also an extra gallon of water. We're safe now for 4 or 5 weeks if we can get some more rain for water, and the corns on my seat from lying down are getting larger and my whiskers are 60 days long. February 13th, I breakfasted off lima beans and I feel full for the first time in months. I feel bloated, just right. You got us through this day, Fritzy sweetheart. Fritzy is Scotty's wife. February 14th. Valentine's greetings to my wife and my pal. Well, Fred and I have it all fixed for Uncle to be here about tomorrow the 15th, and if he doesn't come, we will still think he should. We set roofing paper last night for water, but only a small shower fell, and we got only 1 quart. This is the hardest 53 days Fred and I can remember in our lifetimes. We both agree. And I'm about 15 pounds lighter, and my waistline is 24 inches by measure. February 15th. Daylight falls on Logan Crusoe and Fred Friday, or the other way around, and we feel and look like the original pictures of Robinson and Crusoe. This is the day we picked, and we still will stick to it, that help is on the way to us somewhere in the Pacific. Reader's note, actually, this was the day that Singapore fell to the Japanese. We're getting along much better than a month ago, as there's less traffic in the woods, and I keep planning what I'm going to do when I get back to the States, so I must be going to get back okay. We had bad Jap dreams. I had a bad Jap dream myself. A large 4-motor bomber came over and circled the island about 11, and the little scout went up high at once. The Japs fired at the bomber, which we think was one of ours taking observations. Maybe her hunch is correct, and today is the day. February 16th. Birds being disturbed indicates Japs are coming through the trail en route to work in the garden. Water shortage still haunts us. Japs seem to be getting ready for something. Much machine gun practice. After 60 days, the American fleet must surely be provisioned and equipped to go into action. The fleet should now be working on the Marshall Islands, Palmyra, and Johnson in Midway. February 17th. All work's been stopped from 11 until 2 these last 2 days. We think the Japs may be afraid of air raids at these hours and stop work to use the listening device. February 18th. The Japs seem to have ants in their pants this morning. Planes took off at sunrise and went up high instead of going outward. We are ready for our part, and I hope it won't be long now. I dreamed of Aunt Renee, so she must have been thinking of me. And I'm hoping to get home soon so that Fritzie can stop worrying about me. February 19th. I got up at midnight. You can feel the excitement in the wind. Planes are coming and going, and they only stayed out 1 hour. I can almost feel help is on the way. We're all set to hear the Star-Spangled Banner played on 14-inch guns, and we'll stand up and cheer or even climb a tree as soon as they start. February 20th. Things seem to be shaping up. No machinery moving except for trucks, and no tractors, drag lines, or heavy equipment like yesterday. The ants gave me hell all night. I keep planning on all the things that I'll do at the ranch when I get back. February 21st. Planes were up early, and I can't get my stomach to behave because of having no starch but 1/4 ounce of cornflakes each day. Fred's now whittling a stick this morning to pass time as yesterday dragged on, and he snored all night and I didn't sleep. Well, when we get out of here, I'm going to go to move to a clear to the other end of the island at night and try to get some rest. February 22nd, Washington's birthday. Happy birthday, George. We have a new bomber in the air this morning, and possibly two. I told Fred when we moved in here we would be here at least 2 months. Now we have food for only 2 days, and that's about it, and that's skimpy. We both had not more than half enough food to date, and both of us are very light and weak, and we've had no food or hot food or fire for 75 days now. Make that 77 days. Heavy calluses are on the bottoms of my feet, but actually, they're about as soft as my hands. No action yet from the U.S., though they might be near us from the way the Japs are acting. It really can't be long now. We'll get by fine for 2 weeks, and we know help should be here by then. February 23rd. From the viewpoint of two gophers, something seems to be cooking on Wake Island. The Japs should know that if our fleet comes, they cannot hold the island, so it will be part of wisdom for them to grab everything they can get and go as quickly as they can, and regardless of what they've sacrificed, sacrifice a few lives and get off of Wake. They could probably load out $5 million worth of stuff in a week. February 24th. Reader's note. This is the day of the American counterattack. Shooting started all over the island at 5:30 and continued until 7. We went into the dugout at 6, and that's when the shells from the fleet began dropping all over the brush. 4 of our planes went over, and the Japs opened up on them with machine guns, but held fire with their anti-aircraft batteries. Our plane shot down 2 little Jap scouts the first thing, and now we're probably getting our pictures developed, and if the Japs don't surrender, we'll lay it on them. The music this morning is the sweetest symphony I've ever heard. Our shells whistle in and seem to burst like a Roman candle, and steel flies in all directions. Then fragments start exploding like firecrackers in an alley in Chinatown. Fred and I spend 1/3 of our time in a tree, 1/3 climbing up or down, and 1/3 in a dugout. We're sure like 2 little boys with toy red boats. We assume our planes get pictures of such gun positions as opened up, and any time from now on we expect action to start and not stop until this island is occupied. We hope Wake doesn't cost too many lives to retake, but these boys have had it now too long to suit us. The Japs are going right ahead working on the garden today, just like they thought the war was over and they had won it. Nothing to worry about, they think. Whatever was dropped in shells is new to us, and as they seem to be exploded in small pieces like firecrackers for 5 minutes after the main shell, and it seems to burst with a series like a machine gun rather than just one explosion. Suppose they use these different shells after they locate the targets to blast the guns out. We move back to our camp, which is 100 yards from the dugout, and it's well hidden, and we're going to remain there. When the anti-aircraft starts barking up again and singing into our neck of the woods, we'll go right back into our holes. We would give our left arms for a good old Springfield apiece and plenty of ammo. We would move into the brush and get in the game. Maybe we can pick a gun off some casualty if things get good. The biggest anti-aircraft gun is about 1,000 feet from us, but there's a machine gun very near, probably about 500 feet. God, I wish my family was here. They would get a kick out of this. Myself, I wouldn't miss it for anything. Son, better hurry and get me some grandchildren, because I'm going to have some good stories to tell them. Boy, how our big shells whistle before they land, and do our little planes sound sweet when they dive. When Japs dive on our guns, they shut off their motors and drift down, but our boys step on the gas when they dive down and come in like wasps. Soon they will come in flocks. 4:30 in the afternoon, suddenly, patrol planes are up, but then it's quiet. Uncle Sam seems to have left his calling card and departed as though the war is over. Where is he? But we expected this, as Uncle was just getting pictures today. We'll dust off the furniture and air out the spare bedroom and get ready to welcome him before the week is out, maybe even tomorrow morning. We'll probably be too happy to sleep much tonight, but we hope to get corns off of our knees and elbows and walk upright again soon. February 25th, a squadron of 9 Hunkel bombers came in after dark last night, and Fred heard some more come in while I was asleep. These are 2 motor jobbers with landing gear that does not retract. From what we saw of them, when they first bombed us on December 8th through the 23rd, they're really slow. They're probably going out to work on our fleet, but if our scouts see them first, it's just too bad for them. We don't think our boats will arrive for 2 or 3 days, and by that time we hope that the surf will be quiet enough. It's lots too rough today to try a landing. Japanese work is going right ahead on the island as though nothing was going to happen, but we know better. One of Fred's boys is a gunner on the Idaho, and Fred hopes the Idaho is within the fleet so he might get to see him. But the fleet may not lay here more than a couple of days and then push on to take Guam. Reader's note, Guam was actually recovered 3 years later in 1945. I found a crippled booby bird from yesterday's bombing, and I skinned him to see what he had in the way of meat. It was about the same as a duck, tasted a little different, but we could do nicely on them. We can catch them at night on the low bushes. Reader's note, Scotty eventually made a net hook from a piece of cable and wove several bird nets. But cooking's a problem. We've had no hot food now for 80 days. And we've been hiding for 64 days. Again, at 1 o'clock, a Jap came and looked straight at us through the brush for 15 seconds. Fred was right out in the open, and I was crouched behind a log. We're anxious to see the fireworks start, as we're going to see some show. Our dugout is okay, except for a direct hit. If that should happen, we won't suffer any. But we will be okay and have a wonderful adventure along with some hardships and excitement. February 26th, 4 of the 8 Heinkels which left this morning didn't come back. That could mean they found our Navy and that they flew to Midway, but we assume Midway is still ours by now. February 27th, 8 bombers that went out yesterday are still out. Jap patrols didn't go out last night. You know, either they're getting careless or they're getting cautious. And Uncle Sam has 2 more days to arrive on March 1st, as I had predicted. February 28th, I watched from a tree while a Jap scout took off. Then I took a walk in the woods and found where our shells lit and got some fragments as some souvenirs. The breakers are dashing high over the brush on the northern shore of the island, and we wonder if the storm is delaying an attack by our fleet. I feel good today for a change, but I'm still very weak. I'm going to put this book away and start another so as not to lose my records if possible. Reader's note, in doing so, Scotty forgot a day for leap year, which he omitted from this calendar. So we're going to change the dates that he wrote and adjust them to the actual day. March 1st, reader's note, this is February 29th. The bush near us has taken an awful beating in the past weeks. It looks as though the whole Japanese army has been hunting us. Had a good night's sleep and I'm feeling better, but what we need now is a wheelbarrow to help us walk upright again. After closing our February book, I tied it up in a package with some tools and a neat bundle and then took them to our hollow cache tree, 50 feet northeast from our camp, where we had about 6 more packages hidden. I slid them into the tree through a hole about 6 feet from the ground, and then I heard them fall down into the hollow stump with the others. My plan is to come and get them when Uncle arrives. In the meantime, they'll be safe and dry. Well, at 10 o'clock, a big tractor with a bulldozer came through the brush like an elephant and pushed that tree right down towards our camp. Then he backed up and got some more trees and piled them up. Our other diaries were buried 6 feet under the earth. We saw the bulldozer moving near us and heard words in English and assumed that some Americans were still at work. March 2nd. Reader's note, this is actually March 1st. If God will only send rain and we'll catch it for ourselves. I looked at my broken cache tree sticking out from the ground and debris buried 4 feet. We made a special 2-day cache for leaving if shelling broke out suddenly. We still think help is only a matter of waiting for the sea to calm down. March 2nd. We caught 3 gallons of rainwater, which should help us over the hump. We went and watched with envy as a Jap building was going up inside of our dugout with 8 of the carpenters, American carpenters, working on it. One is Davis, and the other one looks like Dick Myers, also a good friend. I might slip my note if I get a chance. They seem to have only one guard, and he doesn't seem to rush them. Everyone seems good and well-fed, but I think we'll string out luck as long as she lasts. March 3rd. The building progressing fine 200 feet from us, and we know several workmen well, but we're not going to make an effort to contact them just yet. Fred wants to go join them, but I'm afraid he'll stay with me until the food is all eaten, then join them. March 4th. The hammer goes on nearby while I read Hilton's Random Harvest. I've been getting a little exercise, but I'm really tired. March 5th. Japs nearly stepped on us. I've lost terror I had of them at first, now that I see so many of our boys working around them. Japs used decoy trail that I made a half hour after I finished with it. I'm very weak and growing more so each day. I'm not sick but very thin, and my legs and arms are only one half the normal size and my knees won't control. I just stumble along wherever we want to go. Still, when I sit or lie down, I'm perfectly comfortable and not really ill. March 6th. I'm thinking of all the food I'm going to have when I get home. Chicken, rabbit, turkey. I'll build a new canning house on the ranch in the shade under the trees. There's lots of hammering on the building nearby today, and we had to build a new trail to shunt more visitors still further away. March 7th. In the garden, we ate two raw seed potatoes placed by the Japs and helped our vegetable diet and starches this way. We're going to catch booby birds tonight and cook only breast, liver, heart, and fat. March 8th. Ate three booby birds entrails for breakfast, and it was our first hot food in 77 days. We found our first egg last night, but Fred broke it. He's impatient and left-handed like Pinky Gibson. I've no fear of the Japs even if they catch us now, seeing how other boys are being treated. Last night, I was so weak and tired I could hardly get back to camp, and I just heard some voices just now near, so I'm going to hug the ground for a while. March 9th. 10 more days to your birthday, Fritzy, and I want to somehow get word to you so that you can enjoy it more. Booby birds are starting to lay and frigates are hatching. Trees are getting flowers and spring's almost here. Reader's note. Scotty's diary ends at this moment, but his adventures in captivity had hardly begun. That same afternoon, March 9th, in fact, due to leap year, while foraging for food, he walked almost into the arms of 67-year-old Ted F. Hensel of Burbank, Washington, a carpenter who was working for the Japanese. Aghast at the bearded, dirty, rag-clad fugitives who stood tottering before him, Hensel cried out, "You can't be living men. You're already identified as dead and buried." Finally, convinced that Stevens and Scotty were living men rather than ghosts, Hensel said, "You two look terrible. Better give yourselves up. The Japs won't hurt you. They're treating us just fine. Better come in with me." The two hungry, thin scarecrows held a war council, and Scotty finally said to Fred, "If you want to go in now, I'm with you." So the two gave themselves up together, having been, as Scotty says, without ever serious quarrel, just like brothers to the end. The Japanese naval officers were inclined to treat the fugitives as had been predicted by Hensel. Ironically, Hensel himself was to die May 1, 1943 at Sasebo, the horror camp in Japan where the naval jailers were as merciless as those on wake were tolerant. An official interpreter named Katsumami, however, claimed that the two men were spies planted by the Americans. They were stripped and their identification marks checked with company lists. Then they were taken out into the brush camps and told to dig up their radio or be shot. "Go ahead and shoot," said Scotty. Katsumai persuaded the Navy to throw both into jail and inform them that they would be shot in 5 days. Scotty had to give an exhibition with his crossbow, shooting rats to prove it was not a secret weapon. Each day they were reminded of the number of days that they had left. They were kept apart and fed only bread and water. Their last day came and they were allowed to be together and given a hearty meal. Scotty said, "I guess this is the payoff, Fred." And Fred responded, "I can't believe it." At nightfall, their diet was suddenly returned to bread and water. Katsumai came and informed them that their shooting sentence had been postponed because Tokyo had failed to give its approval. Both were released and told that if they returned to the brush, they would be shot. On March 20th, his wife's birthday, Scotty returned to the brush, found his cache tree, and dug out his diary. 2 months later, the fugitives saw what they had missed when the Japanese executed Julius Hoffmeister of San Francisco for stealing liquor and being a troublemaker. As Scotty saw it, a grave was dug 2 feet wide by 5 feet long. The Japs made Hoffmeister crouch on his hands and knees, and a Jap officer took his sword, laid the blade against one of the Americans' neck, and brought it back like a golf club and then down on his neck, severing his head with a single blow. His arteries spurted blood into the trench, and the body was placed there and covered. Still inseparable, Scotty and Fred were taken in September of 1942 to Sasebo Camp in Japan, where 53 Americans out of 265 from Wake died. This was 18 months of hard labor and starvation, with many cases of pneumonia and beatings. They survived and were found in Camp No. 23 in central Kyushu by a Chicago Daily News correspondent named Weller, accompanying prisoner recovery teams. That was from First into Nagasaki.